You know, oral argument for today is case number 69617, Gabriel Ibarra versus State. Mr. Wood and Mr. Owens. Mr. Wood, you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Jeremy Wood. I represent the appellant, Ibarra. Your Honor, to begin with, the court raised two issues. Obviously, it's the consent first. I'll kind of deal with that. The arguments made in the dissent and in the state's brief, both of these arguments regarding whether deceit can somehow vitiate that consent, none of the cases cited by the state actually deal with larceny from the person specifically. They all tend to deal with cases of just general larcenies. So, in the cases that don't deal with the general larcenies, they tend to cite from other things regarding, they cite a marriage case regarding where, you know, individuals under the age of consent, whether they can give consent to a marriage. There are issues regarding Fourth Amendment issues as to whether you can give consent and when it's fraudulently obtained by the police, and those issues are different from what's in the current case. We don't have a Fourth Amendment issue where we are looking in to see whether an individual can give up a right to search their house or a right to search their person, a right to take their blood. We're not dealing with issues like that here. We're dealing with the issue of whether you can take something from the person of another with consent that is obtained by deceit. And
what offense would it be? Like you said, the facts, I understand, are uncontested in this case, that Mr. Ibarra borrowed or asked to use the victim's phone and took off. Is that, if that's not larceny, what is? It's a criminal offense, so what would it be?
In our briefs, set forth at least three or four. There's misrepresentation. It could be larceny. It could be obtaining property under false pretenses. What this would have been under common law would have been a larceny by trick sort of scenario. So in that respect, it's not. And the problem with that is it leads us into that absurdity issue.
Well, I'm thinking of another analogy when I read this. What if somebody goes into a car dealership and says, I want to test drive the car, and the dealer says, sure, here are the keys, go test drive it, and they're gone. They take the car and disappear. I mean, perhaps it's burglary or something else entering the premises, but is it similar to this type of situation?
Your Honor is exact in that sort of scenario. If we allow consent to be taken under these circumstances, then you no longer have embezzlement anymore. So if someone goes into a rental car company, says, I want to rent this car, we have keys exchanging hands, car rental guy hands keys to renter. Renter has no intention of actually bringing it back, holds it. You don't have embezzlement anymore. The problem is we already have numerous statutes that encompass, and had the state charged this under any of those statutes, we wouldn't be here. Because they charged it as the larceny from the person, now we have this other issue. When you look at the chapter 205, there's only five or six statutes that actually put in consent as an element. You've got unlawful taking of vehicle without consent. You've got tampering with vehicle. You've got a couple of identity theft crimes, like personal identification information of another. You've got the credit card crimes. But those are the only crimes that specifically put a consent element in them, aside from the larceny from the person. So to read out, if we go with what the state is saying here, then we essentially make the consent element superfluous. It's unnecessary. And why would we have, why would the legislature have written that in had that been the issue? So you have a number of, like as we've stated already, but absurd instances. If you go into a bar, you ask for a beer, the beer exchanges hands. If I had no intent to actually pay for the beer and I just down it, we now have larceny from the person. Instead of defrauding an innkeeper. And in that same, as Your Honor has just said right now, if I go into a eating establishment, a McDonald's, and I order a burger, and I eat it before I pay the cashier, instead of defrauding an innkeeper, we now have larceny from the person. Because the thing that makes larceny from the person unique is there's no dollar amount. So as long as there is something of value, we have this escalated consequence. It becomes a felony. You have robbery up above, and then somewhere below that, under circumstances quite not at a robbery level, we have larceny from the person. All the common law in reviewing this go towards that as why we have larceny from the person with a felony consequence. It's because it's something additional over just a simple, normal larceny.
Well, wouldn't it be consistent that it has a higher penalty because it puts a person in danger some type of arrest? If you're contacting the person, then I don't see any conflict.
That is correct. I would agree with that. I think we have Terrell versus Gay, which says some issues, it talks about violation of the person or directly invading the privacy of the person. So I think that can also be encompassed to mean what some of these other states have done, where there's that added issue of danger, because it's not necessarily, it's not at the robbery level where we're making threats and there's actual violence there. It's actually, if someone were to take something from my pockets and I catch them, then obviously there's much greater threat of violence there than if it's sitting down at a table, someone picks it up and runs off with it. That's that additional element of possibility of danger. In terms of the court's inquiry as to whether there's Terrell actually, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Terrell, but whether it actually reads in an element of invasion of privacy, I don't believe it does. I think the Terrell court specifically there was called to decide the issue about whether it can be from the presence of another or from their actual person. And there they said, it can't be from the presence. That's why we have the robbery statute, which says it just has to be in their presence. Larceny from the person has to be on them. And we're a state that has gone by that. Now, Terrell, in interpreting it that way, makes some sort of statements about this violation of the person or directly invading that person. But I don't take that to mean necessarily that is writing a new element into the statute. I think it provides guidance to people, and it's a 50-year-old statute, or a 50-year-old case, and it's been amended 5 or 6 times since then. And the only amendments that have actually changed it tend to deal with the punishments. We started at 1 to 10, then it goes to, it starts to deal with the $2,500 value, and then when the value changes to $3,500, it changes. So It goes from a 1 to 10 to a C felony, and then it has the C and the B. So the legislature, in the time since Terrell has been precedent, has been aware that this is an issue, and they're okay with it. They've amended the statute numerous times, and they've never actually gone into that issue. So I don't think it's clearly stare decisis. If there's nothing wrong with it, then there's no reason we should be reinterpreting it or changing it. If the statute had an issue, or if the legislature believed that what they wanted to actually go into is whether there's this element or whether you can obtain consent through deceit, then they can write the statute in such a way to allow for that. I didn't say this up front, but can I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Sure. You've got 5 minutes left now.
Thank you.
Mr. Owens.
May it please the court, I'm Steve Owens of the Clark County DA's office. The Terrell case uses that funny word that I never heard of until I became a lawyer, and that is a gravamen. And it purports to tell us what the gravamen, or the gist, the intent behind the larceny from the person crime is. And in Terrell, this court said that it was a violation of privacy. And I have problems with that word, privacy. I don't see that Terrell's been cited since for that proposition, but certainly here in the Court of Appeals, it played a predominant role in the Court of Appeals finding that there was insufficient evidence here of larceny from the person because there was no violation of privacy. I think that's where we get off track, and that privacy element is simply not part and parcel of our larceny from the person crime. I don't think that the dispute here today really turns on this element of from the person. I don't have a dispute with Nevada, contrary to many other jurisdictions, saying our larceny from the person truly has to be from the person and not simply in the presence. Rather, the dispute I think we have here today is with this consent element and how that factors in. And I don't see consent as being something unique to larceny from the person. It is part and parcel of every larceny crime that is out there. So in my brief, I cited to some common law. Larceny at its core is a common law crime. Larceny from the person takes that common law larceny and adds statutorily this from the person element to have this relatively more modern statutory offense. But at its core, larceny at the common law accounted for this very situation that we have here. And they said that the trick or deceit in obtaining the possession of the property from someone else, that fraud does not vitiate the consent. There has to be a trespass in the taking. And so if the taking is with consent, it's not larceny. Whether it's larceny from the person or petty larceny or grand larceny, it's not any kind of larceny. But if you obtain the consent from the victim through fraud, through deceit, by exceeding the scope of the consent that's given, then that vitiates the consent, and the crime is larceny by trick, which is not a separate crime, it is part and parcel of common law larceny. What that does for us is that tells us at what point in time the taking occurs, because I think in the lower appellate court there was some focus on, well, is it when the phone is transferred hand to hand, or is it later when he turns and runs away from the victim? The larceny is completed with the hand to hand transaction because the consent that is given is for a temporary borrowing purpose, borrow the phone to make a phone call. I don't know that I would be that nice in society. I've become somewhat jaded because of these cases, unfortunately. This Good Samaritan's offering her phone and saying, yeah, I'll dial the number in for you, go ahead and make the phone call. Right then, the consent is for a phone call. The intent with which it is taken is this larcenous intent to permanently deprive and convert the phone to his own uses. We know that because the phone number that he had her put into the phone was his own phone number. And immediately transfers it, the phone to his other ear, and then stands up and then begins to walk away.
Mr. Owens, what do you think about my analogy to the car dealership stepping in, asking to test drive, and taking off? Is it the same thing as the phone situation here?
Well, that's a felony. We have grand larceny auto, I think, that would clearly apply there, so I don't know that factually we'd get into you know, the point of the taking.
Could you charge felony larceny, just regular larceny, based on that type of fact situation?
The larceny of the car, absolutely.
Would it be larceny of the person? Because they hand you the keys and you say, I'm going to test drive this. I want to, just on his example, could you charge that as larceny from the person?
For the keys, yes. I'm not sure about the vehicle, but certainly the keys, when they transfer it. If you can show factually in that case that the defendant had the intent not to do a test drive, but he intended all along, you have to have this coincidence of the act with the intent. As long as we can prove that intent, then yeah, I think that would be larceny from the person. This is a fairly standard legal maxim that fraud vitiates consent, and if we make an exception for larceny from the person, I think we're just going to have an aberration here, and I'm not sure why we treat larceny from the person differently. At its core, it is larceny, and the rules should apply across the board the same to every kind of larceny.
What did we do with the theft consolidation statute 205.0832, subparagraph 1c, taking something through material misrepresentation? That's different because it doesn't necessarily involve from the person. Is that how you would distinguish that? I mean, we didn't repeal any of our other theft statutes when we adopted that. So.
Right. And so although larceny from the person is a relatively modern statute, and parts are after common law, it built upon common law to create larceny from the person, it's certainly nowhere near as modern as theft. Theft came along, and I think for the very purpose that we're here today, to avoid trying to draw these fine lines between brand larceny, obtaining property under false pretenses, which I don't think applies because I believe that requires the transfer of intent. Larceny is the transfer of possession.
So it's the hand-to-hand transfer that, in your mind, is the quintessential piece of larceny from the person?
The from the person element here, it was a phone from one hand to another. And if we just look at that element in isolation, we had that. And the reason that that maybe people hung up on it is that, well, we look at the consent. It wasn't, the victim was aware and then actually intended for the possession to transfer. But what she intended is something very different than the defendant in his state of mind.
Justice Cherry's hamburger.
Mine was a drink, I think.
It was a beer.
A beer, sorry.
Again, it's such a minor crime, I don't know that we would ever have occasion to have this kind of legal discussion about it.
Could be important to Justice Sherry.
No, the hamburger is important to me, not the drink.
The hamburger, how old the phone is, I mean, that distinction, it just seems that the interpretation that you're asking the court to draw would cast a huge net and would be able, you'd have the authority, I guess, to loop into that minor thefts, somebody going to the grocery store and not and giving a bad check, knowing it's a bad check, and walking out with a candy bar, and then that's a theft from the person because somebody handed it over. I mean, I think you touched upon at the beginning the trespassery nature. This feels like a law school exam, you know, the trespassery nature of the contact. But theft from the person is a pretty significant crime for significant reasons, and I'm just curious about your interpretation really getting a whole bunch of other lower-level thefts under that umbrella.
I think it's a felony not because of the consent issue, but because of the from-the-person aspect of this.
Right.
And I don't think I'm asking for an expansion of law. I think I am asking this court to do to follow what the law has always been, the common law, and throughout the history of the country, that fraud vitiates consent for every larceny. I'm asking this court to take a look at Terrell and some words there that I think went unduly narrow beyond common law, beyond the plain language of the statute, of limiting it to a violation of some sort of privacy right. The jury was instructed on all of this, the language in Terrell and on all of this, and 12 jurors said this was larceny from the person. And the district court judge, there was a pretrial writ on this issue, and that's why I don't think we're expanding the law. Many people have looked at this, felt all along, yeah, of course this is larceny from the person. Intellectually, I understand it's a little bit harder to see the trespass, but at common law they dealt with this. It was It was common, and it hasn't greatly expanded where we're charging felonies all over the place. Again, that's the role of the legislature. If they went too broad with from the person making that a felony, they certainly have the means to restrict that, but they call this a larceny, and true for all larcenies, the frauds can officiate any kind of consent. Otherwise, we're treating larceny from the person is different than every other larceny crime out there. And larceny is a lesser-included offense from the person.
So then if the person at the bus, let's say they're at the bus stop, I can't remember the exact particulars, their phone was laying on the bench next to them, and the person said, can I use your phone? And they said, yeah, sure, you can use the phone. Same facts. They pick it up and they run off. Now, it's not from their person.
Right.
So under Terrell, that's from their presence, not their person.
Right.
So you'd say that is not a larceny from the person. That would just be a theft, 205.08321C.
True. And the legislature draws the line. I think the situation there is equally fraught with the risk of danger, because whether it's from the person or presence, I think the danger is the same. But I don't disagree with Terrell's distinction between robbery and larceny from the person, and they're limiting larceny from the person truly from the person, not presence. I don't have a problem with that. But that's the legislature's decision where to draw the line for felony treatment and misdemeanor treatment. And I'm just looking at the plain language of the statute and what larceny means.
Could you help us out on what is jewelry abstraction?
I have no idea. like Judge Tao, I don't know. I haven't had occasion to look into that. I can speculate. But yeah, Terrell limits it to pickpocketing and what else was it? Pickpocketing, jewel extraction, and one other.
Somebody's asleep and you take their ring off. I think that's what it is.
Maybe that's what it is.
Take a piece of jewelry.
Yeah.
Somebody in the hospital.
Yeah, but when the court gives some examples of things that are larceny from the person, I don't think that's an exclusive list. I don't think that we can exclude what common law always was a trespassory taking, just taken by fraud and deceit rather than just by putting your hand in their pocket and taking it when they're unaware. Here the victim was aware, maybe that bothers us a little bit. That's not a distinction that we can draw from the statute.
In the days of negotiations, we used larceny from the person as a plea bargain to reduce somebody who needed a break from robbery, like a high school kid that committed a robbery and you wanted to give him a break, and you do larceny from the person. But
sure.
It's correct that Nevada never had a larceny by trick statute, a separate one. Is that right?
The authority I cited in my brief, sure, I don't know of any statute by larceny by trick. The case lies, or the authority I cited in my brief, indicated that larceny by trick is not, at common law, a separate crime. It always was just larceny, not a separate offense. I'm not a pro when it comes to legal research, but they tell me that's what the common law was. It didn't treat it as a different offense. It always was larceny.
But does the district attorney really want to make cases like this larceny from the person rather than larceny?
In the scheme of things, this is not the largest case, and what this will mean to other cases down the road, probably not much, but I think it's a great exercise in statutory construction. It's an opportunity to go back and look at Terrell, a 50-year-old case, and look at how the court really interpreted that back then and see if that really holds water, whether that's really an interpretation we want to have.
Were there lesser related crimes put in the jury instructions in this case, you know?
Yes, petty larceny. And the jury said that it's larceny from the person. So they were given the choice to go with the misdemeanor. I believe that was the defense theory, and the jury didn't agree with it. And the issue on appeal is sufficiency of evidence. Could a reasonable juror, from these facts, and the facts aren't in dispute, it does come down to a question of law, but implying the law, and they're not challenging the jury instructions, based on the law that the jury was instructed on, I think a reasonable juror could have found this, all the elements of larceny from the person were met beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, getting given the instruction on petty larceny sure did give the defendant a chance to get something less than a felony.
No, certainly. I don't have anything else then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Root, you have a little less than 5 minutes,
4 minutes and 57 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, we've already kind of talked about a number of these absurdities, so I don't want to beat the bush and go into these things, but I think Justice Stiglitz brought up the issue of the bad check. You go in and you have someone, we have an exchanging of hands. There could be a ton of issues, I can imagine, where leaving larceny from the person and allowing consent, deceit to void the consent to allow us down this path where we have all of these absurdities. If you're in a store, a lot of times razors, which are $20, have like a security device, and you have to get someone to actually key it open and hand you the razors. If I then walk out the store and steal the razors, under any other situation, this would be a petty larceny.
Same's true with Prevacet, by the way. Whenever I buy my Prevacet, it's in a container they have to open with a can opener.
And the concern,
but I pay for it.
The concern is, I think, is exactly as the court has stated. The jury in this case was submitted with a petty larceny, and it's hard to kind of guesstimate what a phone's value is nowadays. They used to be subsidized, they're no longer so. You buy them on leases most times, or you buy them outright. So values can be, I think the newest iPhone X is like $1,000. So you're going to end up in felony territory there, but there could be a situation where you have a phone that's not as popular a model, under $650, and under this situation, had it not exchanged hands, it'd be a misdemeanor. But because of the hand exchange, and yes, she's handing over the phone for the limited purposes of him to make a call, but the reason we have larceny from a person being a felony, regardless of value, whether it's an actual danger element or a privacy element or the violation of your own person, there's something additional that takes it beyond a normal larceny. And it is its own beast. And the state can't ignore the fact that consent is specifically written into larceny from the person. And it's, under the common law, yes, it's always an issue under larceny. But in this specific instance, the legislature has written in consent as a specific element only to larceny from the person, not to a larceny, not to a grand larceny, not to a petty larceny, not to any of these other majority of crimes under 205. So I think we run into an issue here where we're felonizing a lot of cases, and if these cases can't be dealt, if they go to trial and we submit, you know, misdemeanors to things for a $20 pack of razors, and a jury's given those to, I don't know necessarily whether they choose larceny from the person because they hear that, you know, a storekeeper handed over the razors.
It's and a B felony, isn't larceny from the person a B felony?
Larceny from the person would be a B or a C. It depends on the dollar. So if it's over the $3,500.
I'm saying this for Justice Hardesty's. I've done a lot of research on B and C felonies. I just wanted to make sure it's either. So it's
A or C. It can be depending on the value. So with that, you know, I don't have a lot additional to add. I do appreciate the opportunity to argue in front of you. Thank you.
Mr. Wood and Mr. Owens for appearing in your briefs and your argument in this matter. It is a unique case for us. The case stands submitted.